A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Welcome to My Weird Prompts, episode 21. So Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the iceberg of people who get a commercial flight from A to B. Not the pilots and cabin crew everyone sees, but the dispatchers, air traffic control, airport fire services, and especially ramp agents and ground services. The question is, how does ground handling actually work? Are these dedicated companies? Or do airports provide them and bill the airlines? And how does the ramp agent act as the gate manager? There's a lot to unpack here.
The timing on this is actually significant. The ground handling industry has become a real pressure point since the pandemic. Labor shortages hit this sector hard, and with ultra-low-cost carriers pushing faster turns, the margin for error keeps shrinking. You had that runway collision in Tokyo in 2024 that put ramp safety under a microscope. So this invisible system isn't just a curiosity, it's a bottleneck, and when it breaks, thousands of passengers feel it instantly.
The plane you boarded this morning was turned around in under 45 minutes by a team you never saw, and if they'd made one mistake, you'd still be at the gate. That's the tension here, invisible efficiency versus very visible failure.
Let's define what we're actually talking about. Ground services cover everything that happens from the moment an aircraft parks at the gate to the moment it pushes back. We're talking baggage loading and unloading, cabin cleaning, catering, lavatory servicing, fueling, de-icing, pushback tug operations, and the ramp agent who coordinates all of it. A typical narrow-body turn, say a Boeing 737 or an Airbus A320, requires 12 to 15 ground staff completing 50 to 60 discrete tasks in under 45 minutes. And they have to happen in a specific sequence because you can't have the catering truck blocking the fuel hydrant and you can't have the baggage belt loader sitting where the lavatory truck needs to be.
50 to 60 tasks, 12 to 15 people, and the passenger sees none of them. You board, you sit down, you might glance out the window and see a guy in a high-vis vest walking around, and that's the extent of it.
That guy in the high-vis vest is probably the ramp agent, and he's the one running the whole show. But before we get to him, the first thing to understand is that ground services isn't one thing run by one entity. There are three competing business models, and which one is operating at your gate determines a lot about how your flight gets handled.
We've established that ground services are a sprawling, invisible system. But who actually runs it? The answer is more complicated than you'd think, because there are three competing business models, and the choice between them determines everything from your bag safety to your flight's on-time performance.
Model 1 is airline-owned handling. This is when the airline runs its own ground operation, employs the ramp agents, owns the tugs and belt loaders, trains the baggage handlers. Delta is probably the biggest example in the U.S. with Delta Ground Services. Lufthansa has LEOS, which handles ground ops at Frankfurt and Munich. The advantage is control. The airline sets the training standards, the safety culture, the turnaround time targets, and everyone reports up through the same chain of command.
The disadvantage is cost. You're carrying all that labor, all that equipment, all those union contracts on your own books.
Which is why Model 2 exists. Independent third-party handlers. These are companies like Swissport, Menzies Aviation, and Dinata, and they are enormous. Swissport alone operates at something like 280 airports in 45 countries. When you fly a mid-tier carrier or a budget airline, there's a good chance the person loading your bag works for Swissport, not for the airline on your ticket. Airport-operated services. Some airports run their own ground handling, Fraport at Frankfurt, AGS Airports in the UK. But here's where it gets interesting. In the European Union, there's a specific regulation, the Ground Handling Directive from 1996, Directive 9667EC, that limits airports from handling more than 50% of their own ground traffic. The logic is antitrust. If the airport controls the gates and also monopolizes the handling, airlines have no choice and no leverage. So even at airports that offer handling, there's always at least one independent competitor.
An airport that owns the runway, the gates, and the terminal can't also own all the people loading the bags. That's the EU saying, we've seen this movie before, and the ending is terrible.
Right. And the US doesn't have an equivalent regulation at the federal level. It's more ad hoc, handled through airport use agreements and lease terms. But the same tension exists everywhere. Airlines want to outsource to cut costs, but they lose direct control over quality and safety culture when they do.
We've seen what happens when that goes wrong. There was that lawsuit in 2023. American Airlines sued its own ground handler at DFW, right?
Yes, and this is a perfect case study. American Airlines had outsourced ground handling at Dallas-Fort Worth to a third party, and they ended up suing because the handler was running 20% slower turn times than American's own in-house gates. 20% slower, on a schedule where minutes matter. American alleged chronic delays, damaged equipment, and operational failures that were cascading across their network. They eventually brought some of those gates back in-house.
Which is basically the airline saying, we tried to save money, and it cost us more in delays and lawsuits than we ever saved.
That's the fundamental tension of the entire industry. The global ground handling market was valued at about $47 billion in 2024, projected to hit $68 billion by 2030. It's growing at about 6% annually. But airlines overwhelmingly treat it as a cost center, something to minimize, rather than a competitive differentiator.
The airlines that don't treat it that way win on it. Southwest and their 20-minute turns.
Southwest's average turn time is 20 minutes for a Boeing 737. The industry average is 35 to 45 minutes. That's not an accident. Southwest invested in ground ops as a strategic advantage. Faster turns mean more flights per day per aircraft, which means higher revenue without buying more planes. But most carriers look at the line item for ground handling and just see a number to squeeze.
Let's talk about the person at the center of all this, the ramp agent. What do they actually do?
The ramp agent, also called a gate lead or turn coordinator, is the central nervous system of the entire ground operation. They manage what's called the turnaround plan, which is a minute-by-minute schedule synced with the airline's operations control center. The moment the aircraft blocks in at the gate, the clock starts. The ramp agent is the one with the headset plugged into the cockpit, communicating directly with the pilots. They're the ones coordinating the pushback driver, the baggage crew, the fuelers, the caterers, the cleaners. And they sign off on the load sheet, the document that confirms the aircraft's weight and balance is within limits.
Here's the weird thing. The ramp agent is managing all these teams, but none of them actually report to the ramp agent. The catering crew works for the caterer. The fuelers work for the fuel company. The baggage handlers might work for Swissport while the ramp agent works for the airline, or vice versa. So the ramp agent has all the responsibility for the turn going smoothly, and none of the formal authority over the people executing it.
That's exactly the friction point. The ramp agent's authority is procedural, not organizational. They can't fire the fueler who's moving too slowly. They can't discipline the baggage handler who's cutting corners. What they can do is document everything, escalate to the airline station manager, and in extreme cases, refuse to sign off on the load sheet, which grounds the flight. That's their ultimate leverage, the power to say, this aircraft is not safe to depart.
It's less like a manager and more like a conductor. The oboist doesn't work for the conductor either, but if the oboist is out of tune, the performance fails and the conductor takes the heat.
At a busy hub, the pressure is extraordinary. Take Atlanta-Hartsfield-Jackson, the busiest airport in the world by passenger volume. A ramp agent there might have 35 minutes to turn a Boeing 737. In that window, they have to sequence the arrival of the catering truck, the lavatory service truck, the fuel hydrant connection, and the baggage belt loader in an order where none of them block each other. The catering truck needs to reach the forward galley door, which is on the right side of the aircraft. The fuel panel is under the right wing. The baggage holds are under the belly. If the catering truck parks in the wrong spot, the fueler can't connect, and now you're 5 minutes behind and cascading.
5 minutes behind at Atlanta ripples across the entire network.
A delay at a hub doesn't just affect that flight. It affects the connecting passengers, the crew scheduling, the gate availability, and the next turn. One ramp agent's bad 35 minutes can strand passengers 3 cities away.
Let's zoom in on some of these tasks. We've seen how the ramp agent orchestrates the turn, and how the business model shapes the incentives. Now, let's zoom in on the specific tasks that make or break a safe departure, starting with something as simple as putting blocks under the wheels.
It sounds trivial, but it's one of the most safety-critical moments in the entire operation. Per FII Advisory Circular 50W52W2W-Tunney, wheel chocks must be placed within 30 seconds of engine shutdown. The aircraft has just taxied in, the engines are spooling down, and if the parking brake fails, which does happen, those chocks are the only thing keeping a 150,000-pound machine from rolling into the terminal.
That's a hard requirement.
It's the standard, and before the aircraft even reaches the gate, there's the marshalling. You've probably seen this out the window, a ground crew member standing on the ramp with illuminated wands using hand signals to guide the pilot to the exact stop position. The stop bar is painted on the tarmac, and the aircraft's nose wheel has to line up within inches. If it's off, the jet bridge won't connect properly. The marshaller is communicating with hand signals because radio can fail, and visual signals are unambiguous when done correctly.
I've always wondered, do pilots actually need the marshaller, or is this a redundancy thing?
At most major airports, there are automated docking guidance systems, visual displays that show the pilot their lateral position and distance to stop. But the marshaller is still there as a backup, and at smaller airports or remote stands, they're the primary guidance. The hand signals are standardized internationally by ICAO. A marshaller in Tokyo uses the same signals as one in Frankfurt. Arms up means stop. Wands crossed above the head means emergency stop. It's a universal language.
There's something almost beautiful about that. In an industry that's increasingly automated and digital, the final few feet of a multi-million dollar aircraft's journey are guided by a person waving orange wands.
Right after chalking comes the foreign object debris walkdown. FOD is anything on the ramp that shouldn't be there. Loose bolts, bits of tire rubber, a dropped tool, even wildlife. Before every departure, ramp agents perform a visual sweep of the area around the aircraft. A single piece of debris ingested into an engine can cause millions in damage. The Concorde crash in 2000 was caused by a piece of metal on the runway that had fallen off another aircraft.
The ramp agent is doing a visual scan of the tarmac looking for anything that could destroy an engine. That's not a job you want someone rushing through.
That's the tension with the turnaround clock. Every task has a safety purpose, but every task also takes time. When the airline is pushing for a 25-minute turn, the pressure to skip steps is real. A proper FOD walk takes maybe 90 seconds. Skip it, nobody might notice, until an engine ingests something on takeoff and you've got a catastrophe.
Let's talk about baggage. How does a bag actually get from the check-in counter to the aircraft belly without disappearing into the void?
This is a multi-stage journey that most passengers never think about. When you check a bag, it gets a barcode tag. That stripe tag the agent wraps around the handle. That barcode contains your flight information, your name, and a unique identifier. The bag goes onto a conveyor belt behind the counter and enters the airport's baggage handling system, a vast network of conveyor belts, scanners, and sortation points that runs underneath the terminal.
The underground city of lost luggage.
It's genuinely impressive engineering. At a major airport, the baggage system can move bags at something like 30 miles an hour through tunnels, using tilt tray sorters and high-speed diverters. Scanners read the barcode at multiple points, and the system routes each bag to the correct departure pier. At the pier, bags are sorted by flight and loaded onto baggage carts, those open-sided trailers you see being towed around the ramp.
Then driven out to the aircraft.
The carts are towed to the gate, and the baggage handlers load the bags into the aircraft belly using a belt loader, basically a conveyor belt on a vehicle that adjusts to the height of the cargo hold. But here's where the critical safety step happens, baggage reconciliation.
This is the part where they make sure every bag on the plane belongs to a passenger who's actually on the plane.
International regulations require that no bag flies without its owner. After 9/11, and especially after the Lockerbie bombing, the principle of passenger bag reconciliation became non-negotiable. Ramp agents must physically match every loaded bag to the passenger manifest. Each bag's barcode is scanned as it's loaded, and the system checks that the passenger has boarded. If a passenger checks a bag but doesn't board, that bag has to be found and pulled off the aircraft before departure.
This is where the 2023 Heathrow meltdown happened.
This is one of the most instructive case studies in ground handling failure. In 2023, British Airways had outsourced baggage handling at Heathrow Terminal 5 to Menzies Aviation. Their barcode reconciliation system suffered a software failure. The scanner stopped communicating with the central database. The system couldn't confirm which bags were matched to which passengers. Safety protocol in that situation is clear. If you can't reconcile, you don't load. But you also can't hold hundreds of flights while IT fixes the problem. The result was 15,000 bags stranded in Terminal 5 over 3 days.
15,000 bags. What did that cost?
BA's estimated cost was around £100 million in compensation, rebooking, and operational recovery. And the reputational damage was enormous. Pictures of mountains of luggage in the terminal went global. All because a barcode scanner system couldn't talk to a database.
Which goes back to your point about outsourcing. When BA outsourced to Menzies, they outsourced the IT infrastructure too. And when that infrastructure failed, BA took the hit, financially and reputationally, even though Menzies was the one running the system.
That's the misconception most passengers have. People think baggage delays are caused by slow baggage handlers, someone not moving fast enough on the ramp. But the reality is, most baggage delays are reconciliation failures. The system can't confirm a bag is on the plane until it's physically scanned. And if the scanner fails or the software glitches, the bag is pulled regardless of how fast the handler works. Speed isn't the bottleneck. Data integrity is.
The next time I'm standing at the baggage carousel waiting for a bag that never shows up, the problem probably wasn't some guy on the tarmac taking a smoke break. It was a database query that timed out.
And here's the other thing passengers don't realize. The person who can actually find your lost bag isn't the airline agent at the baggage service desk. It's the ramp agent at the destination airport. But that ramp agent probably works for a different company than your airline, which is why the airline's app can't track your bag in real time. The data doesn't cross company boundaries smoothly.
That's infuriating and also completely logical once you understand the system. The airline app shows you what the airline knows, and the airline doesn't employ the person who last touched your bag.
There are efforts to fix this. IATA's Resolution 75-3 requires airlines to track bags at 4 key points: check-in, loading, transfer, and arrival. But implementation has been slow, and the data sharing between airlines and third-party handlers is still patchy.
Okay, let's talk about the pushback. You mentioned earlier, this is the most dangerous phase of the ground operation.
The pushback is the handoff moment, the transition from ground control to cockpit control. Here's how it works. The aircraft is loaded, fueled, cleaned, and the doors are closed. The ramp agent does a final walk around, checking that all panels are closed, the landing gear pins are removed, and there's no damage or fluid leaks. Then they plug into the cockpit intercom and give the pilots the verbal briefing, passenger count, baggage count, fuel load, any maintenance items. The pilots confirm. Then the ramp agent coordinates the pushback.
The pilot isn't controlling the pushback.
This is one of the biggest misconceptions. The pilot has no control during pushback. The ramp agent gives the pushback command to the tug driver, who's sitting in that low-slung vehicle attached to the nose gear. The tug driver pushes the aircraft back from the gate. The pilot's job is to set the parking brake when the tug stops and to start the engines when cleared. But the actual movement of the aircraft on the ground is entirely under the ramp agent's coordination and the tug driver's execution.
For those few minutes, a $100 million aircraft is being driven by someone who might make $20 an hour.
That someone is communicating with the ramp agent, not with the cockpit directly in most cases. The ramp agent is the relay. The tug driver can't always see what's behind the aircraft, so the ramp agent or a wing walker is positioned to watch for obstacles and give clearance. The ramp agent gives the all-clear signal, the tug driver executes the push, the tug disconnects, and only then. When the parking brake is set and the tug is clear, does control transfer fully to the cockpit?
The Tokyo collision in 2024, that happened during this handoff phase?
The 2024 Tokyo Haneda collision is a tragic example of what can go wrong during this transition. A Japan Coast Guard aircraft was on the runway while a Japan Airlines A350 was landing. The investigation pointed to a breakdown in situational awareness between ground control and the tower. The Coast Guard aircraft had been instructed to hold short of the runway, but it entered the runway anyway. The JAL flight landed on top of it. 5 people on the Coast Guard plane died.
The connection to ground handling?
The handoff phase, when an aircraft moves from the ramp to the taxiway to the runway, involves multiple control authorities. The ramp agent controls movement on the ramp. Ground control handles taxiways. The tower handles the runway. If there's a miscommunication at any boundary, you get what happened at Haneda, 2 aircraft where only one should be. The ramp agent's role in clearing an aircraft for pushback is the first link in that chain. If the ramp agent pushes an aircraft without confirming the taxi route is clear, or if ground control doesn't have visibility into ramp movements, the system has a gap.
The pushback isn't just about not hitting the jet bridge. It's the first move in a sequence that ends with an aircraft on an active runway.
This is why the ramp agent's job is so much more than most people imagine. They're not just loading bags and waving wands. They're the first safety checkpoint in a chain that extends all the way to the tower.
Let's talk about how different airlines approach this differently. You mentioned Southwest's 20-minute turns. What does a Ryanair turn look like versus a Singapore Airlines turn?
This comparison really illustrates how ground services reflect the airline's entire business model. Ryanair aims for a 25-minute turn. It's bare bones, no catering to load because they don't serve free meals, no lounge bridge to connect, minimal cabin cleaning because they expect passengers to take their trash with them. The aircraft lands, passengers deplane via stairs front and rear simultaneously, the cleaners do a quick sweep, new passengers board immediately, and the aircraft pushes back. The ramp agent is coordinating maybe 8 people instead of 15. Singapore Airlines at Changi schedules a 90-minute turn for a wide-body like an A380. You've got multiple catering trucks. First class, business class, and economy all get different meal services loaded through different galley doors. You've got dedicated cabin cleaning teams, not just picking up trash, but deep cleaning lavatories, vacuuming, restocking amenity kits. You've got multiple fuel connections because an A380 takes something like 80,000 gallons. The ramp agent is coordinating maybe 25 people across a dozen vehicles.
Both models work because they're designed for different things. Ryanair's ground operation is optimized for cost and aircraft utilization. Singapore's is optimized for passenger experience and brand.
And the ramp agent's job is fundamentally different in each context. At Ryanair, the ramp agent is a sprinter. Everything is compressed, the margin for error is tiny, and if one thing goes wrong, the whole turn blows past 25 minutes. At Singapore, the ramp agent is managing complexity. More people, more tasks, more time, but also more things that can go wrong. Neither is easier. They're just different kinds of hard.
What about the future of this? I've read about autonomous tugs and robotic baggage loaders being tested.
Singapore Changi has been running trials with the Origo Auto Dolly, an autonomous electric baggage cart that can navigate the ramp without a driver. It uses LiDAR and cameras to avoid obstacles and can dock itself at the aircraft belly. Amsterdam Schiphol is testing similar systems. The idea is to take the most repetitive, injury-prone tasks and automate them. Driving baggage carts back and forth across the ramp is not a job that requires human judgment most of the time.
It raises the question, if the tug drives itself and the baggage cart drives itself, what happens to the ramp agent's role?
That's the open question. The ramp agent likely shifts from manual coordinator to remote supervisor. Instead of standing on the ramp with a headset, they might be in a control room monitoring multiple turns simultaneously through sensor feeds and cameras. The digital twin concept is already being deployed. Singapore and Schiphol are installing real-time sensor networks that track every ground vehicle's position, speed, and status. The ramp agent can see on a screen exactly where the catering truck is, whether the fuel connection is complete, and how many bags have been loaded, all updated in real time.
The ramp agent becomes something like an air traffic controller for the gate area.
That's the vision. And it could actually improve safety, because the system can flag conflicts automatically. If 2 vehicles are on a collision course, or if a vehicle enters a restricted zone, the system alerts the ramp agent before a human would notice. But it also changes the skills required. The ramp agent of the future needs to be comfortable with data interfaces and algorithmic decision support, not just hand signals and radio calls.
Which probably means higher pay and different training, which circles back to the business model question. If the job becomes more skilled, does outsourcing still make sense, or do airlines need to bring it back in-house to control quality?
That's exactly the tension the industry is facing. The ground services market is growing, but it's structurally underinvested because airlines treat it as a cost center. The digital transformation requires capital investment, sensor networks, autonomous vehicles, software platforms, and the question is, who pays? Third-party handlers like Swissport operate on thin margins and may not have the capital. Airlines have the capital but may not want to invest in something they've spent decades outsourcing. Airports have an interest in efficient ground ops but face regulatory limits on how much they can control.
We've got a $50 billion industry growing at 6% annually, and nobody really wants to own the problem.
That's not an unfair summary, and the passenger feels it in delayed flights, lost bags, and long waits on the tarmac. The next time you're sitting there and the pilot says there's a ground crew issue, what you're really hearing is that somewhere in that complex ballet of 15 people, 3 companies, and a 45-minute deadline, something broke, and the ramp agent is the one trying to keep it from falling apart.
All of this complexity, the marshalling, the baggage reconciliation, the pushback handoff, happens in a pressure cooker of 45 minutes or less. So what does this mean for you, whether you're a frequent flyer or an aviation professional? Let's land some practical takeaways.
First, if your bag is lost, the ramp agent at the destination airport is the person who can actually find it. But remember, they're probably employed by a different company than your airline, which is why the airline's app can't track your bag in real time. The data doesn't flow across company boundaries. Your best move is to file the claim at the baggage service desk immediately, but understand that the person who can physically locate your bag may work for Swissport or Menzies, not for the airline you flew.
The airline's app showing your bag is on the plane. That's only as good as the barcode scan that happened at the gate. If the reconciliation system glitched, that scan might not have happened, and your bag might still be sitting in the terminal.
Second practical takeaway, and this is more for the frequent flyer who wants to understand delays. When you hear ground stop or ground crew issue, that usually means something in the turnaround sequence went wrong. A catering truck broke down blocking the gate. A reconciliation scanner failed and bags had to be manually verified. A FOD walk found debris and the area had to be cleared. These are not random, they're specific failures in specific steps. The more you know about the sequence, the more you can interpret what's actually happening.
Which doesn't get you off the tarmac any faster, but at least you know what you're waiting for.
For aviation professionals, the next frontier is digital twin turnaround management. Airports like Singapore Changi and Amsterdam Schiphol are deploying real-time sensor networks that track every ground vehicle's position, speed, and status. This lets ramp agents optimize sequencing algorithmically. The system can predict that if the catering truck is running 3 minutes late, the baggage loading should be rescheduled to avoid a bottleneck. It's the difference between reactive coordination and predictive management.
That's where the investment question gets really sharp. The airlines that invest in this, the ones that treat ground ops as a competitive differentiator rather than a cost to be minimized, they're the ones that win on reliability. Southwest's 20-minute turns aren't magic. They're the result of deliberate investment in process design, equipment, and training.
The broader industry is watching. The global ground handling market is projected to hit $68 billion by 2030, but that growth is going to come with consolidation and automation. The handlers that can't invest in technology will get acquired or lose contracts. The airlines that keep squeezing ground ops on price will keep suffering delays and baggage failures. The ones that treat it strategically will differentiate on punctuality and reliability.
The invisible iceberg of people who get your flight from A to B. Dispatchers, ATC, fire services, ramp agents, baggage handlers, fuelers, caterers, tug drivers. They're not just support staff. They're the difference between a flight that leaves on time and a flight that doesn't leave at all.
The next time you're sitting on a tarmac waiting for a ground crew issue to resolve, you'll know that issue is a complex ballet of 15 people, 3 companies, and a 45-minute deadline. And somewhere out there, a ramp agent in a high-vis vest is trying to keep it from falling apart.
Now, a Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In 1782, the Hanseatic city of Hamburg recorded the largest single shipment of salted herring in its trading history. 427 barrels, bound for Bergen, Norway, under a trade agreement that required the barrels be inspected for brine concentration before loading. Inspectors rejected 31 barrels for insufficient salt, leading to a minor diplomatic incident between the Hamburg and Bergen merchant guilds that took 2 years to resolve.
427 barrels of herring and a 2-year diplomatic incident.
over brine concentration. Of course there are.
So here's the question we'll leave you with. As autonomous tugs and robotic baggage loaders enter service, will the ramp agent's role shift from manual coordinator to remote supervisor? And will that make the system safer, or just move the failure point somewhere less visible?
The people who make your flight possible are mostly invisible. Now you know who they are and what they're up against. This has been My Weird Prompts, episode 2001. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. We're at myweirdprompts.com, and we'll be back soon with more questions you didn't know you wanted answered.
See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.